I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll talk to country singer Madeline Victoria. Her latest single is He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor. Stick around. My wife only hates me on the dance floor. For me, the best country music songs are the ones that bring a smile to my lips when I hear the title. Sometimes it's because they're clever, sometimes a bit smart-ass, and sometimes, in the case of Madeline Victoria's new single, He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor, it's because they make me laugh out loud. Let's face it, men are beasts. Conversation? Yeah, sure, we'll talk later. But most first impressions for us are caused by shapes we're drawn to, and shapeliness. Can you shake it and not break it? Sold. Now, I know how shallow that sounds, but for me, that's the whole point illustrated in He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor. Oh, and the song has a beat, and of course, you can dance to it. Now, joining me today is the pride of San Benito, Texas, a young woman who was delivered by Dr. Houston. Houston, really? Dr. Houston to the sound of country music in the delivery room. And Madeline will be performing two songs live on the show, He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor and Good at Goodbye. She'll be accompanied on guitar by her brother, Albert Vallejo. Don't miss that. And now, Madeline Victoria, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Okay, let's start with this. Houston, come on. This is like a story that Colonel Tom Parker wishes he had thought of, right?
Oh, yeah. It was just perfect. I don't know. I can't explain it in any other way. It was just the way it happened. I mean, he had his cowboy boots on, delivering me, playing George Strait in the operation room, and here I am, a country singer.
That's just bizarre. Now, were your parents country fans?
Yes, actually, my dad was. My mom, not so much. She grew up in the 70s with the classic, now classic rock, but at the time rock and southern rock and all that. But I kind of have a mixture of both, I guess you can say. But my dad, big George Strait fan. And also, of course, Alan Jackson, the 90s country. Even maybe a little bit older, but the 90s country is where I got really influenced by my parents. So.
Well, I'm just thinking, if now hearing that description, I mean, if I'm your mom and I'm the one going through delivery and labor and delivery in that order, I guess, I'm probably the one who wants to decide what music will be playing while I'm screaming and ripping my husband's hand out or whatever. I'm thinking, if it's 1990, right? You're 25,
yes.
Right? So you're born in 1990. And I'm thinking, if she was a fan, maybe she wanted to hear some Talking Heads, or maybe she wanted to hear, Kansas or... Floyd. But instead she's listening to George Strait, which is probably making her even angrier.
it helps her get through that, right? Just the anger even more. Oh. With the pushing. No. She should have, right, decided that, but I guess for the best delivery, the doctor, I guess it didn't bother her much. Now she's grown to love it. She's grown to love, George Strait and a lot of country that we play, and she thought she never would, but it all started there.
I'm guessing she was not from Texas.
She actually was born here in Texas, but she did travel a lot to Florida. She went to high school over there, and a little story about that is my mom's side of the family, my grandfather was pretty much in charge of hiring a lot of migrant workers for a lot of bigger farms and farmers out there for picking out in the field. So he would take all of his 10 sons and daughters on the road, include that's my mom, along with them. And so they got influenced by a lot of different cultures and a lot of different places, from Ohio to Florida, back here to Texas. So they saw a lot of things and were influenced by a lot of different kinds of music.
And because the show originates in Florida, I have to ask, I'm guessing Southwest Florida, but where in Florida were they based,
Actually, in Central, I believe, around the Orlando outskirts. Let's see. I'm thinking of like Dade City and, Winter Haven. That's actually, I believe, where my mom went to high school. Winter Haven High School, yep. And so, we actually like to visit there a lot. Still have some family out there. So, yeah, I love Florida. That's actually my second favorite state, of course. Texas. Oh, no. My third favorite, because I have Texas, Tennessee, and Florida, because, Nashville.
All right, this is where your brother's trying hard not to roll his eyes. I get it. I see it. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Now that you're able to name your mother's high school, I will accept that Dr. Houston exists and that this story is true.
There you go.
All right.
I'm glad we won you over on that.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight that anymore.
Okay.
Right, so when did you first start singing out loud and at least enough to get noticed? How early was that?
Well, it was actually pretty early. I remember getting in trouble in school in elementary for singing out loud during even tests. And just the class while we're learning, my mind would wander, I guess, and I would just start humming and singing. And then the teachers started to notice, and the teachers actually took me to my mom after school one of these days when she was about to pick me up. And they told her, you know, oh my goodness, Madeline, your daughter, she can sing. And they would take me. And I remember that's my mom's version. But what I remember is they would take me to different classrooms and I'd sing to them for whatever reason. And I guess they were excited. And I didn't know why. It just came so natural to me. I thought, you know, everybody sings, you know, why don't everyone sing with me? And I didn't know that it was something so different than the norm in elementary. And then from there, my parents recognized that. My mom knew that that's what I love. So, you know, I entered different talent shows, and my older cousins, they had me, you know, perform for different things in the high school while things were going on. The first one was a Christmas pageant. I believe I was only 5 when I did my first live performance, and I sang Silent Night at this Christmas pageant they had there, and Christmas play, actually. And it was, I don't know, it was just something that I knew I was going to be doing for the rest of my life.
Did you ever take lessons, or is it something you just developed on your own?
I guess it's just pretty much developed on my own. In elementary to middle school, I got a little more serious in choir, you know, like when I would join chorus and choir and all that, learning sight reading and just, you know, I believe that helped me a lot in vocal training and all that. Not necessarily any private voice lessons or anything like that I had, but going into also my senior year of high school, I also did mariachi band. So that helped me, you know, with my voice as well, I guess you can say. And then a little bit in college, I did some opera vocal training, which was, you know, totally different than country. But in overall, any kind of training, I believe, really does help and cultivate the voice and all that. So, but nothing yet. I'm waiting for the day to get some real hardcore voice lessons and really get my voice even further. I don't know. I feel like I could do so much with my voice, but it's coming.
Well, it seems like the thing that I hear from talking to singers a lot as they get a little older is they look for ways to protect their voice because, you know, we're not, I mean, you're still a kid, I, with all due respect, you're still a kid, but as you get a little older and you continue singing, there's stresses and, you know, physical and mental and other things, just stuff that's going on. So I gather that it helps to have those lessons just to know how to protect your voice and
yes,
how to achieve the octaves that you want, perhaps, but in a way that, you know, saves your voice for the next day.
Definitely. I hear so many different ways that you could, you know, like you said, save your voice and keep it warmed up. And anything like Celine Dion, what she does, you know, it's crazy things. And something that I've not really been doing, like maybe I should, I'm getting more serious about that, you know, gigs, 4-hour gigs. You know, Celine Dion probably doesn't do 4-hour gigs anymore, but that's what I need to start, you know, disciplining myself on that. But I know it's out there, things to do, you know, the teas, the lozenges, the, you know, whatever practicing of vocal ranges, but yeah, eventually I'll get there and I can't wait for that.
I get it. Now, I know that you've done a lot of contests and you've done competitions. The one that really stuck out at me was that you won a competition to open for the Jonas Brothers. Right?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, actually, that was when I was 15, my parents took me to a talent search that was here in Deep South Texas, where I'm from, and it was actually on South Padre Island. I don't know if anybody out there has been there, spring break probably, but it's a really great place. But anyway, they took me there and there was a audition store. At the time it was called Barbizon School of Modeling and Acting. Now I believe it's called School of Talent. And that makes a little more sense because I was a singer going into this and also acting. I love acting and all that. But from there, you know, I got some training down here in South Texas. And then we would go up to Dallas to to get some more training. And from there, I was selected to compete in a competition in New York City where there were many different agents from all over the world there looking for talent, from acting to singing, any sorts and all kinds. And, you know, I got a few callbacks for the acting portion, not many for the singing. There weren't many singing agents after all there, but they did love that I sang and acted and all that. I won a competition there. But when I came back from New York, they had auditions for this group called Radio Disney Superstars. This was in the Dallas, Fort Worth area. So I auditioned at this place, I believe, where Prison Break was actually being filmed. I don't know if you know familiar with that TV show, but I was there on set there. And we auditioned. I got the part for this group, Radio Disney Superstars. We did a few little shows here and there. And the biggest one that we got the opportunity to do was open for the Jonas Brothers. So that was amazing. You know, at the time I was only at, you know, from being 15 to 16 as a little teeny bopper, I guess you could say. I love the Jonas Brothers. And at the time they were super hot, you know, they were at their peak in their career. So that was a really great event. There was thousands of people there at this big water park. And I had the opportunity to sing and dance and open the show for them. We didn't get to meet them, which I was so bummed about. We waved at them. They came in on their big limo just right before their set. You know, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. They got on and they waved at us. I guess their manager or whoever, their agent told them, look, those are the ones that opened up for you. And they waved and they got on and they did awesome. But it was a really great experience. It was the first time ever me seeing how the concert setting and the concert feel and the rush. And it was amazing.
And Albert's thinking, you damn right you didn't get near my sister, you. I mean, what's the age difference between you two?
We are 3 years apart.
All right, so
he's younger.
So Albert, I mean, do you have these moments where you have to be protective of your sister, or you want to be, or you're just like, oh, she's older, she can take care of herself?
No, yeah, every now and then I got to be a little protective, especially out there in the music scene where we're playing at bars and stuff. I kind of watch, I keep an eye on her, and just from a distance, you know, I keep an eye on her. That's just kind of comes natural to me, but sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, the bar is what he said, especially.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, because I was going to ask you when I heard Jonas, I was going to say, okay, which one hit on you? And you know,
no.
let's call him out right now.
Oh, I wish. No.
Okay.
Well, but I do like Nick.
All right, well, for the record, which is the cute Jonas?
Oh, well, Nick Jonas. I love Nick.
Okay. All right.
And his career now is, you know, booming, so that's pretty cool.
Thank you, Albert. You did the same thing I did. but I asked the question, so I'm guilty here. And so when do you separate being a teenager who can sing and, you know, it's a fun thing and you entertain and do high school things, to deciding, you know, I want this to be a career. How do you make that leap?
You know, looking and thinking back and where I'm at now and thinking about the question you just asked me, wow, it's been crazy. I was about 16 when that happened, like you said, and we had the decision of me and my family actually whether I was going to move to Dallas or not to continue with Radio Disney and to continue also being a part of, they wanted me to audition for many different Disney shows and pilots that were going on. And it was a really tough decision. You know, I wanted to like at the time advance my career, but then I also didn't want to miss out on my high school years and really, you know, enjoying that with my family and especially at that young age. So, you know, we decided that I would come back and start to just do a little bit more singing around here. And then my senior year, you know, you gotta really think about, you know, I was applying for college, you know, scholarships, everything. I was, you know, a pretty good ranking in the top of my class, a little, you know, I was probably number 38 out of 500. So, you know, getting out there and really trying to figure out, you know, the difference of what am I going to do? You know, I wanted to be a journalist or an actress, even that's another route, but you know, where am I going to get my degree? And then also, but then there's singing, you know, and I had some really good advice from teachers also who recognized, I guess, you know, they saw what I'm capable of and what I can do with this career. And I have to say thanks to my teacher, my choir director, Mr. Ted Lita. He, you know, is an educated man, a really smart man, helped me with my music. I mean, obviously, he's a teacher, you know, someone who would totally support, you know, you have to go to college, you have to get your degree, you have to do something. But he gave me some really great advice that I just saw everything with my eyes open. And also, at the time, my mariachi director as well. It seemed to, like, it was like a, at one point, a broken record in my mind. Like, you need a, it was just something in my mind that said, you know, you need to decide, you need to do what you got to do with your passion, with your career, what's the best route. So, you know, I did actually leave that, and my faith in, you know, my faith in is all in God's, you know, plan in my eyes and in my opinion, you know. And I, you know, prayed a lot with my family. And it was hard at first when I, you know, just got this like a light switch in me, like, this is what I'm going to do. This is where it was just like a light switch after the praying, after the advice, after everything all together. I entered my college just one semester in college because I was supposed to go to Texas A&M University on, you know, a really good amount of scholarships that I got from there. Then I had a full ride here locally at a university. So I tried that out. And also, you know, I thought maybe I could balance this out with getting a band and booking myself and really, you know, start saving money to record and all that. But it just was a little, it was really hectic. And I thought if I'm going to do 100% in something, I'm going to do it in my for my passion. Cause you know, I don't want to half, but anything, I don't necessarily cuss, but I don't want to do something, you know, I got to do it full out. So it was a little hard at first for my family to really, you know, understand it. But I believe, and I strongly believe now, you know, going through what I went through, that if you find what you want to do in your life, not necessarily think, okay, what college I want to go to or what. No, if you decide, you know, I want to be a singer or I want to be a doctor, you know, what route are you going to take? It doesn't, whether it is college or not. Whether, you know, what, how are you going to get there? So, you know, this is the way that I'm getting there. And, you know, sometimes I feel bad. Sometimes even my friend, my really good friend, Eddie Sines, he's a really great musician here locally too, and really trying to get out there. Well, he went to a university in Nashville and, you know, I got to see where he went, Belmont University. And so he had a, you know, great time learning and education there, but you know, from what he told me, he's like, you know, you're out there in the real world and you're out there, you know, in the, getting the experience that I'm lacking. And now I have to start from scratch and do it all over again. So, it just feels right, you know, where I'm at right now. And, like the transition from the beginning, you said, from deciding, it was just like a light switch after, you know, the praying and the advice and the decision from my family. It was, and it's been, and I don't regret anything, and it's awesome. You know, I'm so happy where I'm at right now.
Albert, did she take a breath that whole time?
I don't think so. She kept flowing. It was just flowing.
I felt it.
I'm just thinking, you don't need that training we talked about because you did all that with one breath. That was amazing.
Yep, I'm practicing my training right now. Yeah, the breathing right here. My diaphragm.
Oh man. All right, well let's actually I'm going to interrupt myself for just a second. Can you move Madeline, can you move back like an inch or two without bumping into Albert and the guitar? Can you move an inch or two, you can. That's good.
Mike,
I was just concerned you may have inched up a little since we reset the shot a little bit. And I just want to make sure that, you know, we got the whole of you right in there. And I can't entirely see. I see what I see, but I want to make sure that we don't cut off the top of your head, especially if we're about to go into the musical stuff.
Okay, great.
So you're good. All right, so I'm going to restart again, and we'll go to the first song. And it's he Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor, right? That's what we're – okay. All right, so if you guys are ready, I'll pick up again, and here we go. All right, Madeline, the first song you're going to play for us is He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor. Do you want to set that up for us and also introduce the handsome gentleman to your left?
Yes, definitely. Well, first of all, this is my brother, Albert Vallejo, and we've been playing for a while now together in the band and stuff, and he's a really talented guitar picker and also helps me a lot with songwriting, and we're starting to get into that a lot more. But I actually wrote this song about 4 years ago. You know, this idea really came from the influence of actually going to the dance halls and here in Texas and seeing the relationship that goes on the dance floor with couples and how that physical attraction, you know, comes first. Of course, like anywhere in any bar. So a lot of people actually can relate to this, whether it's a country bar or any kind of bar. You're looking at somebody and you find that excuse, oh, okay, let me go ask her to dance or something. And it's a really great line. But then, you know, it only, you know, it's just on the dance floor, or, you know, it continues on, you have a relationship and it all, you guys fighting, but then you go out to dance and then you're back there again. You're just back in love. But anyway, anybody wants to take it, if they want to relate to it any way they want, you know, that's fine by me, because that's why I wrote it for you guys. And here it is. He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor.
That was terrific.
Thank you, thank you.
Did you have to grow into that voice? It's a very mature voice.
And I think, from what I've heard from different people, I kind of, like, you know, I don't like to hear myself at all or talk about my voice. But, you know, from what I hear from my family and friends, and I've always, at the level or at the age that I was at, people would tell me, you know, wow, you have such a booming voice for that age. So it's just stuck, you know, with, it just evolved with my age, I guess. And I guess people have, especially because if you see me in person, I'm only 5'2", and I'm really petite, and then people are like, "What? That's coming out of you." So I've always heard that.
It is a big old voice. It's something. And I got to ask you about the song. Now, does this come from personal experience, or does this come from observing other people? Or did you? Is it made up of whole cloth?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I can admit he's probably gonna be rolling his eyes for this one. I can admit that at the beginning it started off with wow, like, you know, this is a good idea. But then after you know a few months, well, not really a few months, I wrote the song. I can't remember how long it took me, but then after that I got a boyfriend who, you know, we would go out dancing and stuff, and I guess we were pretty good dancers together and stuff, but you know, it's not there anymore. We broke up, so he really did only love me on the dance floor.
Oh.
He's just like,
yeah, I'm just looking at him. It's got to be so awkward. All of a sudden, I'm really feeling for Donny Osmond.
That's what they call
it. Whatever. So how far off was I, by the way, in the introduction when I was talking about the song? I mean, about does it capture how shallow men can be, or was I off track with that?
Yeah, it's both. I think, you know, a lot of guys have come up to me and told me, you know, this is my song too, that girl, she only loves me on the dance floor, and no, I hate it, or, you know, whatever the reason is for that. But it's both how shallow men and women can be.
Oh, no, and not women. Women aren't shallow, are they, Albert? Come on. Come on. I don't. I know not what you speak of, young lady.
Oh, man.
All right. So let me ask you this. One more question. We'll go back. We're going to get another song from you guys. How do you decide, as you described how this song came about, how do you decide what's fair game for songwriting and what's too personal to share?
You know, growing up, I started songwriting when I was 13 years old, and that just started off with just, you know, my thoughts and my feelings and just pouring it all out there in different, you know, phrases or even poems. But as I matured, I started getting this idea of, well, I want to have some, you know, some hits on the radio, but then I also want to stay true to myself. And, well, how can I do both? And I looked at my favorite singer, George Strait, and, you know, how did he get so many hits at the time, you know, growing up? He had a lot, you know, probably about 40 or something when I was growing up, and now 60 something. And I just, you know, would listen to his formula, and I actually heard one of his interviews on the radio about how he chose a song that was going to be number one in his eyes and also number one in his managers or producers, whatever. But he has a big say in it. And, you know, it first starts off for him the melody, and he goes from the melody to, I believe, the music and then the lyrics. But if nothing is good enough without the other, then he won't sing it. So, you know, I use that really, you know, as far as my songwriting goes, I use that little technique and form. But there's some songs that I do also that I think that are, you know, just for me to listen to or to hear. But from there, you know, I just kind of noticed the difference of his hits and what really brought it to number one, and what words, and is there a bridge here, is there a bridge there, or, you know, what, how short is the chorus, you know, like, you don't, of course, you have the radio song has to be a certain, you know, amount of time. I really, really look at it as technical as I can, but then at the same time, I don't want to lose my love of the song and the feeling, and I just kind of put it all together, and so maybe, you know, there's a song that I've written that's just for me that maybe somebody else will like out there, and maybe I'll still record it, and you know, something that I'm not really thinking too technical about, I'll still record it and put it out there somehow. But for my singles, as I want to do, I really do want the people to enjoy it. And I really want it to be, you know, my goal is to have the George Strait hits. So, yeah.
Well, and you mentioned before, two questions. You mentioned before how important your faith is to you. Now,
yeah.
Country songs, notoriously, they can be a little salacious, a little adult-oriented, and those often are some of the biggest hits. Can you balance the two?
As far as, like, first for myself to sing,
yeah,
or...
In the modern marketing environment, can you find some balance there?
I believe I can, and I do, if I'm getting the right idea, if we're on the same page here, I have a song, Hold On, and, you know... it's talking about, I say in there, you know, a beautiful sin and holding on to each other, and you're finding love. And, you know, I find that, like, you know, it's the fine line between, you know, somebody that's listening to it that's a Christian and it's like, what did you just say? Or something, you know, like that. But I feel, you know, God and me, we have this really great relationship. And Jesus and I, you know, we're real tight. So whatever I write, you know, comes and is inspired from him. So I don't feel like it's a problem or anything like that. As I get older, you know, talking about things like that, in my eyes, you know, and when I write like that, you know, it's when I find my husband. But if someone wants to listen to it and they're talking about their boyfriend, you know, that's their point of view. So, you know, whatever point of view people will get from that is just, you know, awesome. And, you know, the way I wrote it is the way I see it. And the way somebody hears is the way they hear it. So there you go.
And so you're married?
No. I'm thinking my husband in the future.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought maybe you know, we can help you guys. If you're not married, then we should probably help you guys out. Albert, married? Single?
No, I'm not married, but I'm in a relationship.
Yes, he has a girlfriend. Okay.
All right, so we've established here that Albert is taken, and Madeline is apparently available, gentlemen.
Yes.
You know, and you know, would like to at some point settle down, or at least be married. Maybe not settle down, but be married. So, listen, stranger things have happened on the show than I've played matchmakers. So, you let me know if any good offers follow this.
I'll let you know.
I better shut up now. So the second song that you're going to play is Good at Goodbye. What's the story, if any, behind this? And, you know, tell us something.
You know, when I was – I don't have many relationships. I haven't, you know. I've probably had about two serious relationships my whole life. And this latest one, a lot of, you know, heartbroken songs came out of what I was in the relationship. And it's a good thing, you know, it's good, you know, people can relate to it. And this good at goodbye really is like, you know, just exactly what the title is. This guy was so good at goodbye, what he did, you know, we were so in love or whatever. And now it just seems so natural that you're out there and you forgot about me. So, you know, whether it's in the words, you know, I have not recorded this song yet, so a lot of people don't, you know, can't really listen to it yet, but, you know, I hope too soon. And it's talking about, you know, you go out to the bar and you see him and he just smiles at you and looks away and you're just like, what? Like, how did he just do that? And I'm over here like crying or, you know, whatever, I can't handle this. So, people again can relate to, of course, the love, lyrics and the music is another kind of like a little shuffle that people can dance to at the same time. I grew up here in South Texas where people love to dance, so my music is very danceable, and the words, a lot of people can relate to it, and here it is.
There's a little twist at the end.
There is a little twist. Yeah, I'm glad he brought that up at the end where it's saying in the lyrics where you don't understand why he's so good at goodbye, and at the end I say a little lyrics in there and words that, okay, now I know why that he was good at goodbye, and I'm looking forward to that back to the matchmaker when I find my husband. The one I'm really supposed to be with. That's why this happened, you know. So a lot of people, again, so far that when I play this live, have related to this song, and a lot of people who are married already or with their loved one, and I hope everybody likes this one. It's again Good at Goodbye.
Why did you go? Oh, you're good at goodbye.
that you were good at goodbye.
Done. I'm glad that you set it up the way you did. I was getting very eager to get to the end just to see, you know, how that wrapped up. So that's very nice.
Thank you. Very
nice
Thank
song. Yeah. Now I got like two or three questions left, and we'll get you guys out of here. Get you on your hunt for your husband, I guess. just kidding. Kidding.
Yeah.
Anybody who knows the show knows I'm just kidding. I was scrolling through your Instagram account, which is public. It's not like I wasn't lurking or doing anything strange.
Very true.
But yeah, I mean, you have links on your site to all that stuff. So I went and I looked and I followed you. So you know, you'll know that I've actually been there. I'm not
okay.
So there's, you know, there's lots of family photos. There's band stuff. There's appearances and stuff like that. But buried in there is a black and white image of Johnny Cash. Not a lot of other artists in there, but there's this black and white picture of Johnny Cash. Why?
He, for some reason, I have been drawn to learn about that man's life. His music, everything about him, for some reason, just really hits my heart. You know, I mentioned George Strait earlier. You know, he's somebody who I admire so much, and I hope to sing with him one day and really have him mentor me one day. But Johnny Cash and his life, and, you know, first of all, he actually reminds me of one of my grandfathers. So maybe that's, you know, something that I'm like, oh, you know, his look and, you know, the way he was described in person, his height, everything about him and the seriousness, the interviews that I've heard him in and his recordings. I have pretty much all his recordings and listening to his faith as well. You know, as much as he struggled, as we all know, in his life, his faith was really strong. So I really relate to that. There's something lacking... People, you know, like you've known and what I've said about me and my faith, people always wonder why I'm not a Christian singer in that genre, but because, you know, I just love steel guitar and fiddle, and I want to sing about my life and about my, you know, other people's lives and this life that God gave us. So hearing him and what he did in his gospel CDs, and also, you know, he has CDs and he has albums where he was just quoting scripture, and, you know, he just did whatever he wanted, and people loved him for that, you know, from his rebel side to his, you know, coming to round to his strong faith side. And for that, you know, that's just, I don't know, it's just something I'm so drawn to, his music, his songwriting. Like I said about George Strait and his hit making, you know, I try to put in a little bit of Johnny Cash as well in my songs. You know, I have a few that I've written that are very singer songwriter, and something that he really wrote about his life and his struggles and what he went through. And it was true and it was honest. And, you know, he was a funny man, and I just, everything about him, I just love. I loved it. And I really wish I could have met him, you know, but one day. And my
best Johnny Cash song would be?
You know, I gotta say, I know it's maybe what, you know, too cliche or something, I don't know, but I love singing Folsom Prison Blues. And even though he didn't actually write that song, I know that he took it. You know, I know the story about him being in Germany when he was in the Air Force, and he was listening to a TV show on the radio, and this woman came out singing this song that was, I'm not sure the exact title, but it was something City Blues. It wasn't Folsom Prison Blues. It was something City Blues, and I heard the original recording of the woman singing it, and this is the way he portrayed it from his point of view and his way of that nitty gritty sound and the structure of it all, and just the words and how he made it relatable to people who have struggled in their lives as well. And he reached out to people out in the world, you know, not just in a, it just reaches out to me. I perform that every song, every concert that we do, we end with that one. And that was one of his biggest hits. You know, there's others that I love as well, but you know, that one I can say really sticks out for me. I love to sing it and perform it. Yeah, you could probably see us on YouTube singing it, actually.
Well, and that's a fine answer, but with all due respect, you're wrong. The best Johnny Cash song, and I'll probably get the title wrong, but it's I've Been Everywhere.
Ah! We play that one too.
Do you really? Okay. All right. Then I'll let you off the hook.
I do all the cities and all that. And yeah, I love that one.
I just think that was just brilliant. That's a great song. All right. Last question. How will you know that you've made it in the country music business? What is the milestone that you see off in the distance that you'd like to hit, and you'll know I made the right choice? I walked away from journalism. I could have been Mrs. Media, but no, I chose music. And how will you know that, you know, that was the right choice?
You know, this industry changes all the time. You know, some people might say, oh, my album sellings or something, you know, the hit on the radio. But I've been performing live my whole life, and I love being on stage even more than in a recording studio. I get a little uncomfortable in a recording studio. It's like, oh, I can hear myself, and I have to really be loose, and I have to have my musicians around me, and I feel more comfortable. So having one day when I could say, you know, I'm on a half a year tour, and I've sold out every show, or, you know, that's going to be it for me. You know, when I know that I'm selling out shows, and I have the people coming out to want to see my live show and performance, and that's the biggest goal. And once that happens, I believe everything will follow in there. And my house, you know, I want to be a household name one day, you know, God willing. And that's where it means the most to me, the live shows, you know. That's just, man, that's my favorite thing ever.
Right. And tell folks where they can they buy your music? Where can they get it?
They can get off of any online retail stores, iTunes, Amazon. They can listen to it on Reverb Nation as well. But I really would appreciate everybody, you know, that if they like the song, then thank you guys. And they could purchase it on iTunes, and also follow me on Facebook and the Instagram. You know, you're not going to be stalking me. It's public. You can look at all my photos there and follow me, and I'll follow back. And just thank you guys. And I hope you can become friends.
Wait, you're going to follow me back now?
You don't
have to do that. Then you'll see my pictures of, you know, Taylor Swift, and I'll have to explain that, and, you know, it's the whole thing. I should have never started this in the first place. Website, what's the address for your website?
That is MadelineVictoriaMusic.com, and it's actually not really under construction, but we're working on a new site right now, but people can still go to it, and it's linked to some of my shows, so they can see when I'm performing and all that right now. But like I said, a new one's coming up, but MadelineVictoriaMusic.com.
All right, and folks, got to spell Madeline right to get to it. It's MadelineVictoria.com. Victoria.com.
Yes.
And so you're on Twitter and Facebook and all those places?
Yes, sir, Twitter
YouTube.
And tweeting, yes.
All right. Well, Madeline Victoria, Albert Vallejo, it was a pleasure to meet you. You guys showed a wonderful sense of humor in putting up with my crap. And I wish you both a great, great success. And thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate you having us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Recorded live before a studio audience full of country music fans who want to skip the chit-chat and get to the live performances already, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Who's older, by the way?
I am.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then be respectful, damn it. Holy cow.
That's so funny.
All right.